This presentation is brought to you by iAwaken.org, a not-for-profit organization. We hope you enjoy the presentation. Please observe the copyright terms to which you have agreed.
If there's no peace, there's nothing. It doesn't help. To have all the material wealth and to have all the money and all the beautiful homes and the food and the things to drink, whatever one needs, in Ein Shalom, Ein Klum. If there's no peace, it's not worth a thing. The whole idea of having a lot of material things is to have a feeling of security, to be comfortable and relaxed. But if you've got all that security and outside the walls of your home there's the fear of war, in Ein Shalom, Ein Klum. If there's no peace, there's nothing. So the Medloima says, comes to teach you, Achar Kol Zos, after all the material wealth, V'Nasati Shalom Ba'oret. I will, in addition to all the wealth, ensure that you have shalom, that you have peace. Mikan sha'asholom shokul keneged hakol. From here we see that peace is weighed up against everything. It's as valuable as everything else put together. As it says in Yeshayahu, oyse shalom uvoreyes hakol. And we say it in the davening every morning. Oyse shalom, we praise God for making peace and everything. In two words, in one breath, peace and everything. As if peace is one thing God made, and everything else, and they deserve equal praise. Everything else that God made together is not more valuable than shalom. And the miracle of making everything, this whole beautiful world in which we live, that miracle is no greater than the miracle of the creation of shalom. And we value shalom as much as we value everything else in the world. Without shalom, there's nothing. A society doesn't exist. The purpose for which a society is designed doesn't exist, and therefore the society cannot function. But then comes a very strange thing. Uradaptem es oyaveichem, and in this idyllic utopian time of the future, you will pursue your enemies. Enemies? We've just heard that there's going to be shalom, there's going to be peace. Where do the enemies come from? V'noflu lifneichem lechorev, and they will fall before you by the sword. What kind of shalom is that? Alright, you'll win the war, but who wants to go to war? If they're oyevim, that means there are people on our borders threatening us, and we have to fight them and chase them away. V'rodfu mikem chamisho mea, and five of you will chase 100. Alright, that's very nice. If five will be able to chase 100, very good. U'mea mikem revovo yirdoifu, and 100 of you will be able to chase 10,000. This is also very difficult. Not only do we have the difficulty of what are we talking about war if shalom has been promised, but the progression here doesn't work. It says, five of you will chase 100. That means we will be 20 times as strong as our enemies. And yet it says, 100 of you, and it should say, will chase 2,000, but it doesn't. It says, will chase 10,000. But somehow it seems that the more of us there are, the ratio of our strength to their strength increases. And again, the noflo yaveichim lifneichem lechorev, and your enemies will fall before you by the sword. That's the second question. And the third question, in the klolos, in the curses, one of the terrible curses it tells us, if we don't follow God's way, the naftem ve'ein roideh keschem, and you will flee although there's nobody chasing you. That's quite a klolo, that's quite a curse. That means you'll be paranoid. You'll believe that people are out to get you when really nobody's chasing you at all. But it's not really that bad. Would you rather flee when nobody's chasing you or flee when somebody's chasing you? I would rather flee and know that nobody's chasing me. So I've got a mishugas, I like to run, so leave me alone, let me run. But to have to run with somebody behind me, that's even worse. So what's the terrible klolo? That you will surely, the klolo should have said, v'nastem v'yesh v'edefeschem. You will flee and there will be people pursuing you as you flee. Surely that's the klolo? That's the third question. Let's go back to the first questions and try and understand. You know, to understand how shalom is shokul keneged hakol. Before that, let me answer the first question. The Ibn Ezra answers it with one word. He says on Pasuk Vav, V'nosati shalom ba'oret, and I will make peace in the land. Beinechem, that means peace, internal peace, peace among you, not peace with your enemy. The shalom which is given in the bracha is Beinechem v'nosati shalom ba'oret. In the land there will be peace. Outside the land we're not talking about. There'll be internal peace. Man with his brother will be at peace. Each Jew with one another will be at peace. That's the shalom we're talking about. And it's on that shalom that Rashi says, in Ein Shalom, Ein Klum. We're not talking about a threat from the across the border. We're talking about the threat from inside. If there's shalom inside, we can cope with the border. We'll chase them, v'noflu lifneichem lechorev, which the Mephoshim say, what does it mean? They'll fall before you by the sword, not even your sword. They'll fall by their own sword. They'll kill each other. You just have to chase. Just go, shoot. And they'll run, and they'll kill each other with their own swords. That's all you'll have to do if there's shalom inside. Shalom on the borders, we're not worried about that. And 100 of you will be able to chase 10,000 of them. Don't worry about the borders. As long as there's shalom inside. And the bracha is v'nosati shalom ba'oret. I'll give peace in your land, says the Ibn Ezra. And the Ramban takes on like this, v'nosati shalom ba'oret b'neichem, among you. And that, says Rashi, is shoku kenegadako. It's as important as everything else. And he brings the raya from Ose Shalom Ovorei Tako. So now we know in the mornings when we praise God for Ose Shalom, we're talking about shalom among ourselves, about internal shalom, not about external peace. And so great is the value of shalom that the Gemara, the Yerushalmi, says in Peah, in the first chapter of Peah, that at times in history, when the Jewish people have been Oved Avodah Zarah, they've served idolatry, they've denied the very existence of God, that there's been Shalom among them, God doesn't punish. God is prepared to tolerate everything, Avodah Zarah, and certainly all the other Avodahs. Chilul Shabbos and Treifas and everything. But Shalom, that God is prepared to tolerate. And there's been times when there's been among the Bnei Yisrael, when they've been on very great religious level, formal religious observant level, but there's been no shalom between them, and the Ribbono Shel'Olam has wiped them out. One of the examples, of course, is the very time of Tefillah, which we're celebrating at the moment, which was a time when the children of Israel, when Am Yisrael was on an incredibly high standard of Shmirat Mitzvah, of Talmud Torah, of learning. It was the time of Rabbi Akiva. And Rabbi Akiva had a yeshiva of 24,000 Talmidim. That was only one yeshiva. Over here we've got three yeshivas. One with 19 Talmidim, 15 Talmidim, 16 Talmidim. How much altogether? And we're already proud. And we have good reason to be proud. 24,000 Talmidim in one yeshiva. That was just one little yeshiva. Rabbi Akiva's yeshiva, 24,000. That's what was going on in that time. And they were wiped out. Because lo nohagu kovod there, did it? Because the shalom between them was not as it should be. That's what Ribbono Shel'Olam has no tolerance for and no patience for. And he wipes out. That's what Rashi says. He means shalom and klum. And our shalom shokul keneged akol. There's no peace, there's nothing, and peace is weighted against everything else. That's the extent to which he means it. God is prepared to wipe us out if there's no internal shalom. And if there is internal shalom, he's prepared to overlook a great many things. He's prepared to tolerate a great many things. He's prepared to be patient about a great many things. Just that there should be shalom inside. And then if there is shalom inside, there's no problem in coping with the threat from outside. And this is the big mistake that people make with themselves personally, and with bigger issues, and with still bigger issues. With themselves personally. So people are having problems. They will always pin the problems on something outside of them. What's your problem? Work. Can't take the pressure. What's your problem? My wife. What's your problem? It's the shiurim. Can't take the pace of the shiurim. It's always something outside of one. One has to understand that the problem starts inside. If there's shalom inside, if a person is at peace with himself, he'll cope with the rest. There's nothing he won't cope with. If a person is not in conflict inside himself, the person is not tearing himself apart with conflict, but he's relaxed and he's balanced and he knows where he's going. He'll cope with it all. He'll manage problems of business. He'll see them through. If the learning's difficult, he'll manage. If his marriage is going through a rough patch, Nitya Fela, it will come straight. He knows how to handle it. If there's Shalom inside, then the Radafim is Oyevechim. You still have to chase your enemies, you can't ignore them. But the Nasu is Lechem Lechodiv, you'll just chase them and they'll fall in front of you. A little bit of effort from you, 5 of you will kill 100 of them. 100 of you will kill 10,000 of them. You don't have to worry. But there has to be Shalom inside. You've got to be at peace with yourself before you can start taking on the world. And when you are at peace with yourself, when you are in peace with yourself, you're able to take on the world. People try to take on the world before they're at peace with themselves, and they come unstuck. And when people have problems with the world, the last place they look to try and identify the problems is inside. But that's where the problem is. And so it is with families. Families got problems. What are the neighbors? It's the mother-in-law. It's always somebody outside the family that's causing the stress. If there's shalom bayis, if there's peace inside the family, if husband and wife are relating to each other correctly, supportive of one another, dynamically relating to one another, if they feel they can rest on one another and they don't have to exert energies on sorting out their own internal conflicts, they can handle the mother-in-laws, and they can handle the father-in-laws, and they can handle the grandparents, and they can handle the neighbors, and they can handle anybody and everybody, as long as they're shoveling inside. And a community? Communities then start wasting their time causing machlokes with other communities. Don't worry about other communities. Other communities can look after themselves, and you can look after yourself. And if they are making toilets for you, don't worry. If they're shalom inside, you'll take them on, there's no problem. You'll just go shoo and they'll go crumbling if they need to crumble. You don't have to spend effort to worry about them. Fight outside. You don't need that. As long as they're shalom inside. If there's machlokes within a community, you're dead. The community can might as well write itself off. We've seen yeshivas collapse. A yeshiva has never closed down because of lack of money. A yeshiva has never closed down because of lack of talmidim. Never, there's just been no case. And yeshivas have suffered poverty. And yeshivas have gone through difficult times with talmidim. Yeshivas have closed down because of machlokes. Because there isn't peace inside the yeshiva. And so it is with communities. Communities have not been destroyed by anybody. Communities have been rebuilt. Even those that were destroyed by the Nazis were rebuilt outside of Europe. The only thing that's really destroyed communities, that they are never capable of being rebuilt, is internal strife. Machlokes inside. That pulls it aside at the scene. There's no way that any group of people, any organism of people, can possibly survive machlokes. It's just not feasible that such a thing can be done. That's the power of shalom. People are very worried now about Eretz Yisrael, and with good reason. But what we've got to be worried about is not what's happening in Syria and not what's happening in Lebanon. Because if what was happening in Israel is what should have been happening in Israel, 100 would chase out 10,000, as in the last three wars. This is the most, if this does develop into a conflict, this is the most dangerous we've ever had. Because never has the morale of the people been so low. Never has the spiritual standard of the people been so low. Never has the shalom been so low, the lack of shalom been so high inside the borders. That's what we've got to be mispalei for. That's what we've got to pray for. And to think that we worry all of a sudden about outside the borders, that's not going to help. We have to understand the source of the problem. The source of the problem is right inside. And that's where we have to try and put it right. How far does the shalom go? One of the mitzvahs of the Torah is Lechisno et achicho bilvavecho. You mustn't hate your friend in your heart. Ohavto l'reacha kamecha. You must love your neighbor as yourself. Love your friend as yourself. There's a very important Ramban here. Ramban says the following. I need to learn through part of the Ramban with you. The tam v'ahavto l'reacha kamecha hafloga. The meaning of this mitzvah that you've got to love your neighbor as yourself is very difficult to understand. Because a human being's emotions don't allow him to love somebody else like you love yourself. How can a Torah instruct you to do something which seems emotionally impossible? Apart from that, Rabbi Akiva has already taught Chayecha Kodim L'Chayechavecha. The din is that you come before your friend. You don't have to put a friend before you. Your life is in danger or a friend's life is in danger, you come first. Elotzitza HaTorah, but says the Ramban, what the Torah commanded is Sheyehoiv Chaveiroi B'chol Inyan Kasher Yehoiv Et Nafshoi B'chol HaTorah. It means that you must love for your friend in all matters as you love for yourself. We'll explain that in a moment. That's why it says l'reyacha. V'ahavta l'reyacha kamoicha means you must love for your friend. It doesn't say v'ahavta es reyacha, where your friend is the object. The friend is not the object. You've got to love something else for your friend. L'reyacha, says the Rambam. Very often somebody feels love for somebody else, and you would love to do something for him, you would love to see that he gets certain things. So you want him to have money but not wisdom. You want him to have wisdom but not money. And if you really love him in everything, and if he really loves the person, then he'll want the person to have more than just money or just wisdom. He will want the person to have wealth and property and honor and knowledge and chokhmah, but the loishi yishvu elav, but just not quite as much as I've got. You should have it all, but just a little bit less than me. I must have something over him. Yeah, there's some mother-in-laws who will give their daughter-in-laws all their recipes except one. You can have it all, you can know, just one thing let me have that you can't make, that it comes to me just for one thing. That's that kind of thing. That's the furthest the person normally gets. Because the Ramban, even that's not enough. Aval yiyeh chofetz b'libo lo'ilom sheyiyeh hu yoseh mimenu b'chol toiva. And normally a man will always wish that in all matters he has a little bit more than everybody else. And the Torah commands that this degenerate jealousy should not exist in a human being's heart. That's Torah. Something which other people would say is just normal human behavior, and it's just, after all, we're all only human, but Ramban calls degenerate jealousy, and it has to be wiped out. You know what that means? Even wanting your friend to have everything in the world, but just a little bit less than you've got. That's kino pchuto. Aval yehoz berabus ha-toivo l'chaveiro kasher odo moise l'nafshu. But you should want as much goodness for your friend as you would want for yourself. V'loi yiten shi'urin bi'ahavo. And you should not give measurement when it comes to love. Don't dish out your love in measurement. When it comes to love, open the barrier. You should want as much for your friends, and your friends doesn't just mean your friends in the English sense, it means all of Klal Yisrael. You should want as much for them as you want for yourself. There should be no limits at all, no barriers when it comes to love. So the Ramban here defines the degree required of ahava, of love, of shalom, of peace between people. One has to want for another person what one wants for oneself. In other words, says the Ramban, that the mitzvah to love one's friend is really the eradication of any form of jealousy. How far does that go? Moshe Rabbeinu was arguing with the Ribbono Shel Olam very early on in his career. The argument was that the Ribbono Shel Olam wanted to appoint him to bring out the people from Mitzrayim, and Moshe felt there were more suitable leaders than himself, which of course made him even more the most suitable leader. And then finally he says to God, in Shemot chapter Dalet verse Yud Gimel, Vayomer biyadinin, he says, please, Ribbono Shel Olam, shlach no biyad tishlach, send already somebody else, find somebody else. And Chazal tell us, what does Biyad Tishlach mean? Biyad Misha Atarogil Ishlach. Aaron, please, send my brother. He's the one you normally send in these matters. He's my older brother. What do you come to me for these things? Go to the normal guy. Was he saying this out of a bit of jealousy, that you normally go to him? Why come to me now that you're in trouble? Or was he really feeling that Aaron was the more suitable person? Let's see the development. So then God says, Vayicharaf, and God gets angry. Vayicharaf Hashem b'Moshe. And God says to Moshe, God gets angry with Moshe, Vayomer, and he says, Haloi Aaron achicho alevi yodati ki daber yedaber hu, your brother Aaron the Levi, I know that he will speak, v'gami nehu yotali krosecho, and he's also coming to meet you, v'roacho v'somach b'liboy, and he will see you and be very happy. Says Rashi, bringing a Gemara from Zvochim, Rabbi Yeshua ben Korcho Omer, Rabbi Yeshua says, this is very strange, kol charoi nafshe batoiro, ne'mar boi roishim, v'zeh lo ne'mar boi roishim. Whenever it says God gets angry, in the Torah it always leaves an effect of his anger. We see he got angry and did something. He punished somebody, he struck out, he brought about a plague, he did something terrible. Here it just says he got angry and nothing happens. And we don't see that God punished anybody by this anger. He gets angry at Moshe and he doesn't do anything about it. Rabbi Yosef said, Rabbi Yosef, listen to this. Rabbi Yosef says, no, Rabbi Yeshua ben Korcha, you've missed the point. The punishment is right here, it's mentioned. Haloi Aaron Achicho Alevi. Just it's veiled in the words God uses, and he talks about Aaron, your brother, the Levi. And when is Aaron the Levi? Wasn't Aaron the Kohen? Shehaya Osid Liyos Levi. Aaron was destined to be a Levi, the Loi Kohen, and not the Kohen. Vakuhuna Yisrael Melates Mincho. And you, Moshe Rabbeinu, were going to be the Kohen. Aaron was just going to be a Levi. Those of you who are learning Gemara Ksubis know the differences between a Kohen and a Levi, and how particular we are about the Yichus of a Kohen, and the place of Kovod that a Kohen has, and how we treat the Kohen, and we call him up first to the Torah, and L'chol Dovah should be Kedusha, he always goes first. May ato, but now, lo yiyechein, Moshe, it's not going to be this way. Ela hu yiyechein, v'ato ha-levi. In the Gevorim Ksubis, we're talking about Mali. Here we're talking about Moiridim. Moshe is fired as a Kohen. He's sacked. Now Moshe, you'll be the Levi. And I'm promoting Aaron in your place. Aaron becomes the Kohen, you become an ordinary Levi. That means you realize that when there was Kriyat HaTorah and Moshe and Aaron were in Shul, Aaron got the first Aliyah, Levi got the Moshe got Sheni, he got the Levi. Aaron was called up first. Aaron was the Kohen, and that was something which was initially reserved for Moshe. Now imagine a situation where the chairman of a company walks in and fires a managing director and says, you can now be the assistant managing director. And we're bringing in the assistant managing director, the fellow you trained, and he now becomes the managing director. What kind of relationship can you expect to be between the two? Can you imagine the jealousies and the conflicts? Here Moshe is pulled down from Kahuna to Leviah, and Aaron is promoted from Leviah to Kahuna. Can you imagine how his heart broke? Can you imagine how pained he felt at that? And yet there's a beautiful perek of Tehillim, Perikus Lamed Gimel, which is one of the Shir HaMalos, very strange wording in it. It says Shir HaMalos LeDavid, Hine Ma Toiv Uma Noim Sheves Achim Gam Yochad. Starts with a very famous verse. How good and pleasant is it when brothers sit together. Normal pshat of this pasuk is that it's going on the future of the people of Israel, where David HaMelech talks about the beauty of Israel not being divided into the two kingdoms into which it was later divided. Kashemin HaTov Al HaRosh, and he uses an image like the good oil on the head. That's talking about the oil of Mashiach, when one appointed a king, one used to pour oil over his head. That was the act of Mashiach, like the good oil poured over his head. Yoyred Al HaZokon, and it drips down the beard, the kana Aharon, the beard of Aharon. She yored alpi midosov, and from its beard it drips down his neck and through his color. What's it all about? It's just a beautiful symbol of, you know, when the head gets a lot of oil on it, it affects the whole body. And that's the way, when the head is okay, when the head has got what it needs to get, it overflows to all the rest. If the head doesn't have enough, the body lacks. Ketal Hermon Sheyere Dal Hararet Siyam. Like the dew on Mount Hermon up in the north, where the Syrians are. Sheyere Dal Hararet Siyam, which comes down through the River Jordan and actually feeds the mountains of Siyam around Jerusalem. Because they're lower down and the dew comes down, and actually the dew of Hermon, which melts and flows into the lake of Tiberias, and from there down the River Jordan, and that actually feeds the city of Yerushalayim. So there again, you don't have to worry, it comes from all over. The high places of Hermon, if there's water in Hermon, Yerushalayim will drink. Kishom tivo Hashem et abrocho. And now he switches and he says, because there in Zion, God gave the blessing, Chayim ad olam, blessing for always, and you don't have to worry, if there's blessing in Yerushalayim, it will go all over. That's the positive. The interesting word is the hesitation or the stuttering in the middle sentence. Kashemen atoy bala rosh, like the good oil poured over the head. Yoved ala zokon, and it goes down, it drips down the beard, zakan Aharon, the beard of Aharon. What's the double usage of the word zakan? Meshitim ukubetzis in krisis dat heyam udbes, the Gemara brings this pasuk and discusses it, and the Meshitim ukubetzis brings a beautiful medrash, where the Medrash mentions that when those drops of oil were dripping down Aaron's beard, just imagine for a moment the thrill. Aaron standing there after all these years, and finally they're pouring the oil onto his head, which makes him Kohen Gadol. Not just Kohen, but Kohen Gadol. Can you imagine the thrill, what he's now going to be able to do, the service of God that he's going to be able to enter. The Aveda of Yom HaKippurim is going to be the only one who's allowed into the Kodshi HaKadoshim. He's elevated to the highest possible level of Kedusha with that act. And imagine what pleasure he took with every drop of oil that spilled down his beard. It must have been the most luxurious feeling you could possibly imagine. And how did Moshe feel at that moment? Seeing his demotion and Aaron's promotion being put into real effect. How did Moshe feel? There's the medrash brought by the Shita Mekubetzis, that's the Zakan Zakan. There were two beards. It was as if the oil was dripping down Moshe's beard as well. He got exactly the same pleasure that Aaron got. It made no difference to him whatever. The actual physical feeling of the oil dripping down his beard and the thrill and the exhilaration was not reserved to Aaron. Moshe felt every bit of it without any difference. It was exactly as if he had it done on himself. That's what it means, says the Medrash. Hine ma tovu ma noyim, how beautiful it is. Sheves achim gam yochad. Then brothers can sit as one. And brothers can sit together. And yochad comes from the word chad, as one. Not two people together, but chad, as one. And we know already there's scientific evidence that twins can sometimes feel one another, and close brothers and even close friends. There is such a concept. It's possible for two human beings to feel the same thing. But would one have thought that it was possible for the demoted to feel the same as the promoted? And to have the same pleasure and joy? Just imagine you standing there at the big celebrations. They call a party for your successor. And you there to carry his tote around. Well, you there second in command. And you used to be head. And now there's a big celebration going on for him. And you have as much nachas as if it was for you. No difference. That's how far shalom has to go. It should make no difference. That's what the Ramban means. The peace has to go so far that it makes no difference if he's got it or if you've got it. If he's having the pleasure or you're having the pleasure. It should make no difference at all. Amazing. We'll have to see how one gets there. But that's the concept. That's how far it goes. And it was reciprocal. Because in the very same Sukkim in Shemois, Rashi brings the Medrash that says, what does it mean? V'gam hinei hu yoytze likrotechon b'yod Aaron is coming v'roach ha'v'sonach b'liboy. And he will see you and he will be happy, says Rashi. What does it mean? Lo'y kishe'ata sovu shi'yohe makpid. alecha, shata oile ligdula. Not like you think, Moshe. You're worried that Aaron's going to be upset. That's why you keep on saying, so here we see why Moshe didn't want to take the job, because he felt that Aaron would be upset. Not that Moshe didn't know that he's the better one. Yeah, he's the better one. Maybe he should go. But is it worth upsetting Aaron for that? So he says, Shalach biyad tishlach, send it rather in Aaron's hand. Says, God, no, I'm sending you, and here Aaron comes, and Moshe, you've misjudged Aaron. It's not as you think that he's going to be upset with you. On the contrary, Varacha, when he sees you in your new capacity, Vesamach b'libo, he's going to have such simcha you can't imagine. Says the Midrash, why does it say Vesamach b'libo, he's going to be happy in his heart? Because he's going to be so happy that he won't even be able to express it in words. He'll be so happy, he'll be happy in his heart more than he's able to express. That's Varacha, he'll see you, Vesamach b'libo. Umisham, and from that, Zocha Aaron la'adei achoshen anosim haleh. Because of that, that Aaron HaKohen had the schus, had the merit to carry the choshen mishpat on his heart. The choshen mishpat was the Urim B'Tumim, among other things, which enabled Aaron to answer any question of major significance which was put to him. He had all the little lights that used to light up, and that gave him the ability with Nevuah and Ruach HaKodesh to answer any difficulty that was given to him. It was because of the Ruach HaVetzonach Belibo, because he was capable of feeling the same simcha at Moshe's promotion that he would have felt at his own promotion. It made no difference. That was Aaron HaKohen. In fact, that's a very important capacity. The ability to identify, and now you see that the word identify is a very good word which we use in English. Except that in English we don't know what it means. Identify doesn't mean that you're able to appreciate another man's feelings. Identify means it makes no difference to you if he's getting the honor or you getting the honor. It makes no difference to you if he's got the wealth or you've got the wealth. It's the same pleasure. A Jew is wealthy. Baruch Hashem, what difference does it make which Jew? If it could only be one, does it matter if it's me or him or somebody else? Somebody's wealthy, wonderful. Somebody's been promoted. Who cares if it's me or somebody else? A Jew is happy today and I'm happy with him. That's what identification means. That's what it means to identify. It's interesting also, just by the way, the concept of the Yalkut brings here, the Somach Beliboy, that the deeper an emotion is, the less it's expressed. And people tend to make a lot of mistakes and think that, who are the emotional people? He's a very emotional person. Why? Because he always cries. That's not an emotional person. He's a very emotional person because when he's happy, he dances. That's not the emotional person. Those are the superficially emotional people. The deep emotions are not necessarily shown so easily. Man in our society takes out a lady for the first time. Is it possible that he loves her? Not possible. How is it possible to love somebody the first time you see them? Possible to have fallen in love, but we're not talking about that. We're talking about loving them. To love them the first time you see them is not possible. And he takes her out and they look at each other's eyes as if they're in love and they dance and all sorts of things that they only do there. And somebody says, look at that couple, aren't they in love? When are they in love? 10 years later, when they're just sitting quietly at the breakfast table, and the way he says goodbye to her before he goes, gives her a little smile, a wink, then you know they're in love. But to gyrate around the disco floor, that doesn't mean that they're in love. And that says the Yalkutia, V'ra'acha v'somach b'liboy. Moshe, you might not even notice his simcha at first, but it's b'liboy, it's so deep that he's unable to express it. This ability to identify is very important for any form of leadership. And in the beginning of Shmuel, we learn how Eli became a little bit unstuck on this particular point. You remember Hannah was very upset. She was barren, and Penina, the other wife of Elkanah, had children, and Hannah had none, and finally she decided she would go to the Mishkan there, and she would be mispalel, she would pray to God, and undertake that if she had any children, she would dedicate them to God. We're told, "V'chano hi medaberet al libo," and Hannah was talking to herself. And Eli was trying to listen, was trying to hear what she was saying. Eli was the Kohen. Her lips were moving, the koila lo yishomea, and her voice was not coming out. And Eli assumed she was drunk. And she said to Eli, and Eli said to her, Ad mosai tishtakorin, how long are you going to carry on with this bottle business for? Hasidius yenech me'alach, get yourself off the bottle, go to Alcoholics Anonymous and get away. Vatan Chanon, Chana answered, Vatomir, and she said, Lo yaduni, no, my master. And the Midrash says, Lo yaduni, no, you are no longer my master. If you've made that mistake, and you don't understand what I'm talking about, Lo yaduni, you're not my master anymore. Isho keshas ruach anoichi, I'm a bitter person. V'yayin v'sheicha lo yishosisi, and I've drunk no wine or beer. Va'eshpoich es nafshi lifnei Hashem, and I'm simply pouring out my soul in front of God. The symptoms depend on one's understanding of the problem. I've always said that the most competent man to diagnose an illness is the GP, not the specialist. The specialist might be the most competent man to treat the illness, but it's the GP in the days of the old kind of GPs who's the most competent man at diagnosing the illness. Because an illness can have the same symptoms. Two illnesses can have the same symptoms depending on one's knowledge of the patient. One has to know something about the person to be accurate in the diagnosis. Ailey sees a woman walking around talking to herself. She's drunk. You're right, Ailey. Most people who walk to themselves to talk to themselves are either drunk or mad. But if you would notice this woman's eyes, if you would notice the expression on her face, if you would know something about her background, if you would inquire before you decided, you might find that she's showing the symptoms of drunkenness, although that's not her disease at all. She's simply sad and bitter, and she's praying. So we see the very gift that was given to Aharon, the gift of being able to see into situations and to answer problems with the Choshen Mishpat, with the Urim Betumim, was given to him because of his ability to identify. And Chano says to Eli, Lo yaduni, you're no longer my master, because you don't have the ability to identify. Again, identify means being able to feel the same as the other person is feeling. How do we get there? How does one achieve this? Because this is terribly important. This is shalom. This is what it means to be at peace with one another. To be able to feel one another's feelings. To be able to know what's going on in another person's mind. To be able to respond not to what other people tell you. What they tell you is sometimes the tip of an iceberg, and sometimes there's no iceberg even there. Sometimes people tell you things which are completely irrelevant to what's really going on inside them. And sometimes, if you're lucky, what they'll tell you is relevant to what's going on inside them, but simply the tip of the iceberg. Back to the same thing, v'somach belibo, when an emotion is deep, people don't talk about it. If you think you're a chochem because you understand what somebody said to you, that's not a chochem, that's just the basics of human communication. A chochem is to understand what he didn't say to you, and to be able to answer him on what he didn't say to you, in a way that he doesn't even feel embarrassed that you're answering him on what he didn't say to you. That's what shalom is. That's what identification is. The Gemara in Kiddushin says, the Gemara which we in fact did previously, a very famous one, where the Gemara says, Amar Rabbi Chiya bar Abba, this is on Daf Lamed Amud Beis, Afilu ha'ov uvnoi, harav v'salmido, even a father and his son, a Rebbe and his Talmud. Gemara, one has to look at the words terribly carefully. Firstly, who are we talking about? A father and son, Rebbe and Talmud. She'oiskim b'Torah b'shar echot, we're learning to Torah in one place, in one city. Na'asim oyevim ze'etzeh, they become enemies of one another. Here we have the foundations, in fact, of the generation gap and teenage rebellion, this whole concept. It's not unnatural for a father and son to go through a stage where they're oyevim, where they're enemies. And it's not unnatural for a Rebbe and a Talmud to go through a stage where they're enemies. In fact, it's natural. If they're learning Torah, it's going to happen. V'einam zozim mishomad shenasim oyevim zeh. But they don't move from there until they become lovers of one another. this relationship which is at the moment so bad and so distracted on the surface, ultimately blossoms into one of Oyavim Zeete, where they love one another. Why do I choose this Gemara? Because this Gemara seems to be one which indicates how to move from a situation of hatred, which is the most extreme, to a situation of ahava, of love, as defined by the Ramban. Not every machlokes works like that. The Mishnah in Pirkei Avos says there are two kinds of machlokes in Perek Hei, Mishnah Yud Zayin. Kol machlokes she l'shem shemayim sofa l'hiskayim. If a machlokes is l'shem shemayim, we'll see in a moment what that means, it will exist. Meaning that it won't pull the relationship apart. The relationship will continue to exist. L'she'en l'shem shemayim ain't sofa l'hiskayim. And if it's not l'shem shemayim, it will cease to exist, the relationship will cease to exist. In other words, the machlokes will destroy the relationship. Ezoi machlokes shi l'shem shemayim. What is an example of a machlokes which is l'shem shemayim? Zu machlokes hilul v'shamayim. Example of that is the machlokes hilul v'shamayim. Says the Rambam, Mishiyeh chalek, a person who will dispute, loy lekavonos stiras divrei chaveros, not with the intention of pulling his friend to pieces, elo liritzoyse elo da'as ho'emes, but because he wants to know the truth, his kain v'dvara v'lo yapsik. His words will work and it will continue and the relationship won't be damaged. So the Rambam here defines the two kinds of machlokes, the one which can be resolved into ahava and the one which will never be resolved into ahava. A machlokes can be resolved into ahava if the intention is to discover the emes. If the intention is to destroy the other person, the machlokes will make no progress. And the Gemara in Eruvin in fact says, like, who do we paskin? Do we paskin like Beis Hillel or Beis Shammai? And the Gemara answers, we paskin like Beis Hillel. Why? Not because Beis Hillel was cleverer than Beis Shammai. In fact, we're told that Beis Shammai was sharper. Intellectually, Beis Shammai was sharper. But because Beis Hillel learnt both the words of Beis Hillel and Beis Shammai. The loyoid, and not only that. Ela sheik dimur divrei Beis Shammai. They used to learn the words of Beis Shammai first. Just think of such a situation. They're arguing. When Hillel argues, the first thing they do is they take Shammai's viewpoint. And they try and understand it. They try and accept it. Only if there's a problem in accepting it, then do they move on to Hillel. That really gives us the secret of how to make machlokes correctly, the correct way of making good machlokes. To start off with your view and then go into attack to defend your view, that's machlokes she'eino miskayemes. That's a machlokes which is going to destroy a relationship. Because it's the purpose is listor is divrei chaveiro. You want to show that you're right and he's wrong. You want to start a machlokes, if you want to dispute, you start off with the assumption that he's right. And you analyze and analyze and analyze. And if you can convince him finally that you can't learn that way. Look, we've tried to, we've assumed that it was right and it doesn't work. Now let's see if we can put forward something which is better. That's a machlokes which is going to bring to ahava, it's going to bring to love. The Chaim Shmuel Levitz used to have a wonderful chiddush on something similar. He used to ask, the Medrash says, and Rashi brings it, there was one of the Magaif, was one of the plagues in the Midbar. God said to them, take the Ketores, take the incense offering and organize it, and that will stop the Magaif, that will stop the plague. And Rashi brings the Medrash there that says, this fact, this secret, that the Ketores can stop a plague, who taught that to Moshe Rabbeinu? The Malach Hamovis, the angel of death. Asks of Chaim Shmuel Levitz, that's very funny. For a man to teach somebody else tricks, okay, one can understand it. But to teach him the tricks of one's own trade, that says of Chaim Shmuel Levitz, is very strange. If I sell houses, to go and teach people how to bargain the seller down, it's not a normal thing. That's not what people normally do. The Malach HaMoveth's business is to kill, to go and give away the secret of what can prevent the killing. How come he did such a thing? Says Reb Chaim Shmulevitz only too beautifully. He says, we learn in the Gemara in Shabbos Daf Peches, the famous Gemara that Moshe went upstairs to get the Torah and the angels started arguing. It was a machlokes. Their claim was that the Torah is not for human beings. The human beings are going to fall. They're not great enough to handle the Torah, and it's not for them. This must stay in heaven. The Torah is too perfect and ideal to go down to a non-ideal and into an imperfect world. And Moshe Rabbeinu challenged them. Moshe comes to take the Torah out of heaven, and they argue and they fight. Moshe wins the fight. Says Reb Chaim Shmuel Levitz, they became such close friends that the Malach HaMoveth walked over to Moshe and put his arm around him and said, look, you know, I come and kill people, but you should know when I do it, the Ketoros is the answer. Don't worry about me. Don't get scared. That's the degree of Ahava. There was no barrier whatever between them. There was nothing that they wanted to hold back. Even the Malach HaMoveth's own trade secrets, he was prepared to give to Moshe at that time because of the love that had been created through machlekes, through arguing. That the purpose of the argument was to get to the emes. And when the emes was reached, there was peace. There was settlement. And that peace resulted not only in peace in the sense which we know today of non-conflict, but it resulted in ahava. It resulted in unbridled and unlimited love. And there we get an idea already as to how one can reach the shalom that we're talking about. The shalom that we're talking about, what are the impediments to this shalom? Why is it so difficult to reach the shalom? Two reasons. The one is a basic primitive animal drive in every human being for self-preservation. If there's only one glass of water and you and I are both thirsty, the natural animal instinct is, I drink. If there's only a certain amount of money in the economy, I must give it. It's a natural drive for self-preservation. But that doesn't apply in the society which our Sedra is describing, because we're talking about a time of brocha. There's so much, there's plenty, there's wealth. There's enough for everybody. Nobody has to go without. So that's no reason for there to be a lack of shalom. But there's another reason why there's a lack of shalom. And this is the more delicate, and in fact the more important reason to understand, the more difficult reason with which to cope. That is a person, every person, as the Ramban said that we just learnt, likes to feel unique. He likes to feel different. Sometimes that expresses itself materially. He likes things which other people don't have. And he'll pay an awful lot for a painting which is not as good as some other painting, but of which there's only one and nobody else has it. And she will pay an awful lot for a dress which nobody else could possibly own. So we like to feel different. We like to feel unique. We like to feel individuals. But much more serious is the area in which we like to feel individuals in the sense, in an intellectual way. We like to feel that we have our own approach, that we have our own ideas, our own concepts. And we're not just one of a whole group, and we're not influenced. We're independent. We're self-made human beings. It's one of the feelings we have. And that's one of the most severe impediments to shalom. Because how do you go into an argument when that's your motivation? To prove the difference between you and me, not to find that we're in fact saying the same. You'll be disappointed if you land up saying the same. You want to convince yourself that you're different. That's machlokes koyrach va'adosoy. That's the machlokes she'ein sofo lihiskaye. That's the machlokes which ruins relationships. That's why it says an av v'bnoi, a father and a child, a Rebbe and a Talmud. Why is there machlokes there when they're learning Torah? Because a child likes to assert his own individuality. Comes an age when he wants to feel he's doing it all himself. Just to feel that I've been mekabel Torah from my parents, and I'm handing it over, and I'm living according to what I've learned, and I'm just a link in the chain, there's a loss of identity. He wants to feel big and important. He wants to do things. That's why on university campuses,
You've got SRCs and things like this, things that you never have in yeshivas. You never have student unions and yeshivas and all these kinds of things. Very, very seldom. Mainly because a student needs to feel that he's doing more for something original than just learning from his teachers. Learning from his teachers, that's not... I'm not expressing myself enough. I need to demonstrate, I need to hold elections and run an SRC and do all these things myself. I need to be an adult. He wants to feel like an adult that is really playing a part in running the world. So he makes these little things. A student and a child. That relationship between Rebbe and Talmid, father and child, goes through a very delicate stage of rebellion. It must go through that stage of rebellion, otherwise the child or the Talmid is a shlumiel. It's got to go through a stage where he battles to try and assert his own individuality. And then comes the critical stage in that child's education or in that Talmud's education. Okay, you want to fight? Let's fight. But see that you're fighting for emes. Don't come and fight if you're trying to assert yourself. If you're trying to assert yourself, you'll ruin this relationship, and I would rather not teach you Torah. If we're going to study, if we're going to learn together, let's fight. But it has to be where your kavona is not to start with your view. Start with my view. As Beis Hillel put Beis Shammai's view first. If there's something you can't take in my view, if you can question it, if you can criticize it, if you can pull it to pieces, then I'll listen to what you've got to say. Maybe you've got something better to say. And if you can convince me that I'm wrong and that yours is better, adarabba, nothing would give a father greater pleasure and nothing would give a Rebbe greater pleasure. And to have a Talmid is able to argue with him meticulously and accurately and show him that he can in fact improve on something which the father or which the Rebbe has said. That's the greatest thrill that a parent can have. It's the greatest thrill that a Rebbe can have. But it has to be on that basis that makdimin divrei Beis Shammai ledivreihem, that first you study what the other guy says because you want to get to the emes, not just to propose your own ideas. And if that's the basis of it, einam zozim mishom, they don't move from their adchinasim oyavim ze lazeh until they become lovers of one another. Because finally they're going to reach the emes. And when they reach the emes, they're going to love one another for it. Because they reach that emes together. Each one will feel enhanced. Each one will feel that he understands it better now than he did before. Even if the Rebbe was right all the time, even if the father was right all the time. After an argument like this, the father will understand his words in a way he could never otherwise have understood them. With a much deeper understanding and a more meticulous analysis than he could have understood them before. And he'll feel ever grateful to his son. And his son will feel ever grateful to the father. And what a relationship will be established during those moments of machlokes. You know, we like to feel ourselves, we like to feel unique, we like to feel alive. And we feel very threatened by feelings of uniformity. When is a person most at peace with himself? Go to the movies one evening, to a good movie, or go twice. The first time you go, watch the movie. The second time you go, turn around and watch the people. And you'll see hundreds of people sitting in an auditorium. It's hot. It's unpleasant. Everybody's sitting on top of each other. And they're sitting there for hours and hours. And there's this look of bliss on their faces. They're in heaven. They're just relaxed. And they're involved. And nobody's arguing with anybody. And nobody's fighting with anybody. You can even get away usually with rustling a little bit of sweet paper. And probably nobody will even say anything. If you don't do it for too long. Everybody's just in an absolute bliss. In a state of absolute heaven. That's the Gan Eden for them. Watch somebody reading a good novel. Sitting on his comfortable chair. A cup of coffee. And reading a good detective story. And it makes sure that the children are making a noise around him, he doesn't hear them, and he's, again, this beautiful, relaxed look on his face, and he's in heaven. The man's at total peace with himself. How come? The strange thing is, when you're involved in something else, that's when you feel at peace. There's no way you can be involved inwardly with yourself and feel at peace. When you're busy watching yourself and looking at yourself and analyzing yourself and criticizing yourself and planning for yourself and seeing everything in terms of how does it affect me, there's no way you can be at peace because you're so complicated. How can you be at peace? But when you apply yourself to something outside, and you're applying your total self. You're applying your intelligence, you're applying your emotion, you're applying your sense of hearing, your sense of sight, you're applying your imagination, you're applying everything to what you're doing. That's when you feel at peace. And strangely enough, that's when you feel unique. That's when you feel an individual. Because everybody's makeup is so different that nobody understands the same thing in the same way. Nobody feels the same thing in the same way. And when you're totally involved in your detective novel or in the good movie, you're in your own world, you're doing it your own way, you're doing your own thing, and you feel that. You feel different from everybody. Although you, who've gone to look at the people, not at the movie, you turn around, you're amazed by how everybody's wearing the same expression. And how everybody's so uniform. And everybody, in fact, is even dressed so uniformly. They try and get away from suits and ties so that they can be individual. So they land up all wearing open neck shirts, the same sort of calendar. It's all the same. And you look at you see 2,000 people sitting up there. When you go, by the way, to see the movie and not to see the people, not to see the movie, buy the cheap tickets right in the front. Firstly, it's not worth wasting money on the expensive ones because you've seen the movie before. Secondly, what you want to see, you'll see best from right in the front. And turn around and have a look at them. And there they are in their blissful states of happiness, all looking identical with the same kind of expressions on their faces, but all feeling very different, all understanding things in a different sort of way, all feeling individual, all feeling themselves and feeling very relaxed because they're totally absorbed. And that's really how one has to get to Sholem. One has to get to Sholem by not needing to act unique. By not needing to assert your individuality. Because where you're asserting your individuality, you're creating conflict. Where you're able to feel your individuality by total immersion in something that demands your individuality and that can only be understood by your individuality. That's Amelim by Torah. You've got to apply yourselves to Torah. That's the condition for the Sholem. V'im b'chukosai te'lechu. How will you get this wonderful Sholem which the Torah is talking about? Says the Torah, v'im b'chukosai te'lechu. If you'll follow my statutes, says Rashi. What does that mean? She'tiyu amelim b'Torah. That means that you'll work and you'll toil and you'll apply yourself with everything you've got to understand the piece of Torah. Because if that's the way you're learning to get to the emes, you want to understand it, not to put your own ideas forward, and not to try and make chidushim. You want to understand the Torah, that's what you want to do. And you want to do it with your total personality, you want to use your intelligence, your feelings, your imagination, your understanding, in order to get to the bottom of Torah. And you will get to the bottom of Torah in a different way to anybody before you. Each person understands Torah if he's applied himself properly in a slightly different way. And you'll experience your individuality. And when you're feeling your individuality by virtue of your application, you don't need to assert your individuality by virtue of machlokes, by virtue of being different and standing up and showing yourself to be different and demonstrating how different you are. The more one has to demonstrate how different one is, the more one feels the same. A man who feels different doesn't have to demonstrate his difference. A man who feels like an individual doesn't have to act like an individual. He doesn't need it. He feels it. That's him. He's able to meld into things. He's able to become part of something. He's able to lose himself in greater thoughts and in greater ideas because he's absolutely confident about his own individuality. He's not insecure about his own individuality. And that's for the Nasati Sholem. In order that there should be peace, there has to be that Amelus Batoira. I want to just show you one last Gemara. Where not only does the toil in Torah affect the peace with which one is able to live, but in fact the peace affects the way one learns one's Torah. They're discussing various generations in which Torah was learnt in Sanhedrin Daf Kaf Amud Aleph. And finally they talk about one of the greatest generations was the generation of Rabbi Yehuda Barabi Eloi. Omru Arava Rabbi Yehuda Barabi Eloi, they said about the generation of Rabbi Yehuda Barabi Eloi, Shehoyu Shisho Talmidim Miskasim Betalis Achas Voiskim Betorah. There was such poverty that six Talmidim used to
wrap themselves in one talis while they were learning Torah. That's all they had to share. Six people had to make do with one talis. And the talis doesn't mean the talis to daven with. That was their only clothing. One garment they had to, six people had to be dressed in. Rashi says they were so poor, it shows their poverty. Again, Reb Chaim Shmuel Levitz says it's not just their poverty. That's not what made their learning so great. What made their learning so great is how did they manage to share one talis among six people? You know, our life, we were just talking, some of us, before davening. Our whole lifestyle is designed not to share. And when you think of it, it's a bissel meshuga. Take a human being like myself, who happens to have a swimming pool. Not by choice, it's there. But let's say I put it there by choice. So how many hours a year do I use the swimming pool? If it's me personally, about 10. If I was a big swimmer, maybe I would swim every day for 6 months. That's, what are we talking about, 180? So we're talking about 180 hours a year. That's not very efficient utilization of capital. And the rest of the time, the swimming pool stands unused. So really, why don't I make a deal with my neighbors? And say, look here, let's fence off an area in between the four of us, and we'll build a swimming pool, the four of us together. It's unlikely that we're all going to want to use it at one time. It will be on the edge of all our property, so it won't take up all that much space. And if we do want to use it at the same time, it's nit gefelach, it's a big pool, two people can get into it also. And it will be cheaper for us, and more fun for us, and it will be a pleasure. Have you ever heard of such a thing happening? No. Our lifestyles are designed a fence around, and I must be self-sufficient. I mustn't need anything from my neighbors, and I needn't have to share anything with my neighbors. That's how we live. It's crazy. And so it is with many of the things we do in a community like ours. You'll find that many of the families have to keep sets of crockery, 24 pieces, 66 pieces, I don't know how many pieces. And you say, why? Why do you need so much crockery? No, sometimes they have a shiva brochus. Listen, you say to yourself, really? Can't a couple of people get together and buy a set of 100 pieces? So what will happen? So sometimes you need 30, sometimes you need 40. How often is it going to happen that more than 100 pieces are going to be needed on the same night? Isn't that the logical thing to do? Everybody saves a bit of money. The thing is used much more. There's more communication and cooperation between people. But no, like Meshugoyim, each one goes and buys their 100 pieces, or their 60 pieces, or 24 pieces, which they're going to use once or twice a year. And so it goes on. And big dining room tables. And you say, my goodness, why such a big dining room table? No, sometimes you have 20 people. How often? Can be 4 or 5 times a year. So get 10 families together and buy a big dining room table, which you borrow 4 or 5 times a year. But we don't do it. It's very much like my famous story about Gehinnom. The man who's finally let into Gehinnom, into hell, looks around and says, this is hell. Had I known this was Gehinnom, I would have done every Aveira in the Torah. Just look at it. The tables are filled with the most beautiful foods and drinks, things that I never saw down there in the world. I really feel upset that I'm going to heaven. This is Gehinnom. This is where I would like to stay. He looks and he looks and he says, how long have these people been here? They look rather emaciated. And the angel says, oh, they've been here for 70 years, that one, that one's been here for 114 years, that one's been here for 300 years. And you say, but the cutlery is also clean and there's so much food on the table, haven't they been eating? So the angel says, no, look at the cutlery, you'll understand why they can't eat. He says, yes, I can see the knives are very long and the forks are very long, and so are the spoons. But that's no problem, let Chaim feed Shmerel, and let Shmerel feed Chaim, and let Reuven feed Shimon, and Shimon feed Reuven, because these spoons were much too long for one person to feed himself. So the angel said, suggest it to them, it's a very good idea, suggest it. So he goes up to Chaim and says, Chaim, aren't you hungry? He says, I'm famished. He says, no, it's very simple, you know, just get together with Shmerel over there and you feed him and he'll feed him. Me feed Shmerel! I would rather die! That's Gehinnom, and that's how we live here, that's how we operate. If I can't afford something myself, so I'll go without it. I could get 4 or 5 people together and together we could afford it. That means taking down some barriers, that means shalom. That means peace, chas v'shalom. Absolutely not. Six people had to use one talis, Nebuch. Says Reb Chaim,
If each person, each time his toe goes out of the talus, tries to cover his toe, and when his finger comes out of the talus, he tries to cover his finger, there's no way six people are going to manage with one talus. He says there's only one way that it's feasible to manage six people with one talus. And that's that each one is busy covering the other one up. If each one is trying to cover his neighbor up all the time, then six people can possibly use one talus. Says Reb Chaim, that's why that generation was the greatest generation of Torah observance and of Torah learning. Because they were living in an age of shalom. They knew how to cooperate. Remember the Ramban. The Ramban says you don't have to love your neighbor. You don't have to like him. You don't have to feel that you want him as a close friend. You don't have to live in his pocket, and he doesn't have to live in your pocket. All you've got to do is have simcha when he's happy. That's all. Enjoy his happiness as much as you enjoy your happiness. Want for him like you want for yourself. The Ramban is so realistic, because what the Ramban is telling us, you can't force people together. Some people click and some people don't. But the chiddush of the Ramban is that has got nothing to do with cooperation and shalom. There can be shalom among people who don't like each other as well. You can have pleasure out of another person's pleasure even if you don't like them. It doesn't have to be hatred, that's all, not sino. The ability to cooperate and to work peacefully with somebody, that can be achieved even without av or even without love. There can be shalom. And we've learned that the shalom comes in the intellectual area and in the emotional area. The shalom comes primarily through arguing, but through arguing with a desire to get to the truth. Two people who keep their arguments under the table and won't talk about it and won't come out with it, there's no way that they'll reach these levels of shalom. Two people who argue, always the one trying to prove himself right, there's no way that he'll come to shalom, there'll be a distraction. But two people who argue, each one trying to understand as hard as possible the viewpoint of the other, then you'll have shalom, you'll have ava, you'll have love, you'll have peace, you'll have cooperation. Let's just conclude with the other two questions. Why is it that whereas five people can chase 100, 100 can chase 10,000, so that the progression is increasing sort of geometrically? The answer is very simple. When a community is relating with shalom, it's not just, in other words, if there are five people, it's not just, and each one has, talk in money terms, if each person has 1,000 rand and five of them, it's not that the community has 5,000 rand. The community really has 5 times 5,000 rands in a sense, because everybody's helping each other. There's a qualitative increase. If the community has a certain energy, it's not just that it's five, it's the number of people times the amount of energy that each person has. It's a qualitative increase, because each one affects and infects the other. And so as you've got more people, you've got more shalom. If you've got five people, you've got a certain amount of shalom between them. But if you've got 100 people, there's much more shalom. And if you've got 1,000 people, there's still more shalom. Where there's peace and many people, the more people you've got, the more shalom there is. And the more shalom there is, the more power there is. The more potent the community becomes, the more potent the group of people becomes. And therefore, whereas five have only got a little bit of shalom, so they can only chase 100. 100 have got a lot of shalom, and they can chase 10,000. And then we ask, well, what's the good of all this peace if there are enemies on the outside? There'll always be enemies on the outside. That we'll never get away from. And in fact, the greater we are and the more shalom we have, the more they'll be jealous. The Torah is realistic. Inside there can be shalom, outside there are going to be oyavim, there are going to be enemies. But don't worry, you can handle them easily. You can brush them aside. If you have shalom, if you have unity of purpose, if you share a common vision, if you know where you're going and you share common values, you'll wipe them out in 2 minutes. Don't worry about them. Enemies they'll be, but you don't have to be scared of them. To an individual human being, we'll say problems they'll be. Marriages do go through rough times. There are problems in business all the time. You're going to have problems. Children give problems. Relations give problems. Political situations give problems. But if there's shalom inside you, don't worry. You'll get rid of the problems one by one. You'll overcome them. It will be no difficulty to you. They're not going to do you in. And to a community, one will say, see that there's shalom inside your walls. Don't worry about what they're trying to do to you outside. You'll manage, you'll cope. And to a country, you'll say, see that there's shalom inside. Political difference, sure. You want a mapai, and you want a mapam, and you want a chayrut, and a maftal, and all. No problem. there's plenty of place for differences. But there's got to be a common desire for MS. You've got to be working towards what's best for the country, not what's best for me. Because when you're working for what's best for me, you're going to destroy yourselves. You won't have to wait for the Syrians to destroy you. It'll be easy. It just works in the opposite. The same way as when you've got shalom, you can just push them aside. So chas v'sholom, when there's no peace among you, they'll just be able to push you aside. That's how it works. And finally, in the klala, what does it mean? And you'll run and nobody will be chasing you. There's a Rashi which is difficult to understand, and the Siftei Chachomim says something which is just too delightful for words. V'naftim ve'en reideif eschem, and you'll run away and nobody will be chasing you, says Rashi. V'en reideif eschem, says Rashi, mibli kayach, for lack of strength. What does that mean? And you will flee, but there will be nobody chasing you, for lack of strength. Says the Siftei Chachomim, your enemies will consider you so weak that they won't even bother chasing you. The biggest insult of all is not to be pursued. That's the worst it is. Somebody doesn't think you're even worth pursuing. You're not even worth a chase. You'll fall down yourself. That's the biggest insult. There's a tremendous Musar Haskel from here. When they're persecuting you, as long as you know you're right, as long as you've got something, listen to them, maybe they've got a point. But if you've listened to them and you've used this mechanism of putting their words before yours, and you've listened and you've tried to understand what they've said, and you're convinced that you're okay, and you've tried to convince them, but still they persecute you, so you realize that it's not for the sake of Eneskite, but because it's a machlokish, shalom l'shem shemaim, take pleasure, take pride. Somebody considers you worthwhile destroying. They're worried about you. When they stop pursuing you, that's when you've got to get upset. Why have they stopped pursuing me all of a sudden? There can only be one reason. Either they've become tzaddikim, they've done tshuva, maybe. Or if they haven't done tshuva, they've written us off, and it's not worth making a fuss about them, leave them alone. And that's a terrible insult and a terrible klola. So it says God, there's going to be peace inside. And I'm not going to give you the curse that there'll be peace outside. That would be a klola. Everybody considers you so irrelevant, you're not worth making a fuss about. No! There's going to be problems on your borders. The Russians are going to want to get in, and the Americans are going to want to get in. The Arabs are going to want to get in. Everybody's going to want a hand in your country, because it's valuable. And they want to destroy you, and you should feel proud that they want to destroy you. But as long as there's peace inside, 100 of you will kill 10,000 of them. Don't worry, it will be easy. The thing is to make sure that there's peace inside. This is one of the big problems of our generation, both on the world political scene, and on the communal scene, and on the personal scene. That we always look at our tzoras as being over the borders. Tzoras over the borders are a privilege. Tzoras over the borders show that you're a person who's worthwhile, or that you're a community that's worthwhile, or that you're a country that's worthwhile. Tzoras over the borders means that you've got something precious. Take pride and pleasure in tzoras over the borders. But watch out for shalom inside. Just make sure that there's peace inside, and that you've routed out any possible machlokes inside your ranks, because that will destroy you, that will eat you up, and that will finish you. And the greatest bracha of all is Menosati Shalom Ba'oretz, I'll give peace in the land. Says the Ibn Ezra, that peace is not Shalom on the outside, but Shalom Beinechem, it's peace among you.